Please welcome in our new sponsor, Title Match Wrestling and Title Match Network. Go to TitleMatchNetwork.com to save 20% off all memberships with the coupon code SAVE20NOW. That's SAVE20NOW, SAVE20NOW. Members get access to every pay-per-view of the year, plus all VOD titles on site. It is one of the biggest collections of women's wrestling content on the planet, featuring hundreds of exclusive live streams every year, a near endless amount of pay-per-views, shoot interviews, documentaries, and more. Multiple 24/7 channels with zero commercials. Massive amount of original programming here, plus upcoming IPPVs for this month only available on Title Match, Thunder Rosa's Mission Pro Wrestling, Circle 6 Live in Las Vegas, Battle Pro in Brooklyn. All new this month, plus the latest installment of the hit series with Greg the Hammer Valentine. The Title Match Network is the perfect gift for the wrestling fan. Test out their content for free on YouTube. Just go to Title Match Network and you'll see that they have over 2 million subscribers. And of course, they're one of the largest independent wrestling channels in the world. Get exclusive access. Sign up today at TitleMatchNetwork.com. That is TitleMatchNetwork.com. And use that coupon code SAVE20 now. Welcome in our new sponsor, Middle Kingdom Wrestling. Were you excited to see some Chinese pro wrestling when AEW announced that they would be featuring Chinese wrestlers on their program? You can now watch Chinese pro wrestling right now by checking out Middle Kingdom Wrestling, aka MKW. MKW is the top pro wrestling organization in China today. They are a unique pro wrestling company with Chinese characteristics. MKW has showcased, developed, and promoted wrestling in other countries such as Nepal, Vietnam, Thailand, South Korea, and more, with particular focus on countries that are part of China's One Belt, One Road initiative. MKW's live broadcasts in Japan consistently attract millions of fans, even often reaching 10 million concurrent viewers. Besides checking out MKW on YouTube and subscribing to MKW, you can also purchase the first ever international wrestling merchandise from Middle Kingdom Wrestling on ProWrestlingTees.com. It says in Chinese, "Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle." This is a great, great art piece on the shirt. It's funny, it's positive. Best of all, it promotes wrestling and the Chinese culture. So take the call to action from MKW. Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle. Middle Kingdom Wrestling.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
Welcome to the Business of the Business podcast. I am your co-host, JP John Paz, with the Two Man Power Trip. Of course, joining me is my co-host, Mr. Trump Mania himself, the Wizard, Mr. Lavi Margolin. Lavi, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. Again, thank you to our continued sponsors, Middle Kingdom Wrestling and Title Match Network. And a congrats goes out in our industry to our friends at Arcadian Vanguard for launching the wrestling news and hitting number one immediately.
Yeah, I was shocked to see that. Not because of that, just because, you know, you got Cornette, obviously, always on the top of the charts. And you got all Conrad and Foley and Nash. So I was like, wow, like great job by the great Brian Last and Brian Solomon and the crew over at Arcadian Vanguard.
Yeah, cool to see a different take, which is funny, like straight up news, NPR-like is something unique to our industry. So it's good to see someone doing it, and not just someone, but a professional team and a great bunch of people.
Yeah, they know what they're doing over there. They got great content. So good job by those guys. But as far as us, we got some big news of the week to discuss. And the first thing I wanted to ask you was, what's going on with Control Your Narrative? I just had on the highly controversial Austin Aries. We went over every controversy ever, you know, that he had involving the business. But there might be another controversy. What's going on with the tour? And is Braun Strowman really headed to WWE? Because that would totally kill CYN, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so as far as we know, it seems like a done deal with Strowman going to WWE. I think it was PW Insider that first reported it, that he would be on Raw on Monday night, or if not, I'm sure sometime soon. But the Control Your Narrative tour, of course, is sponsored or funded by a touring company or an entertainment company out of LA. I think the executives, when we last looked at it, had a background in music. So there was a number of events booked, sort of not big venues, but known venues, like out by you, the Starland Ballroom in New Jersey, a chic looking place in Brooklyn, and all across the US, pretty much a number of shows. And you know, no one really had high hopes for these shows, I guess, outside of the promoters and the CYN team. But I don't know. This might be an out for them if they don't have their main star. Maybe, and I have no idea of the contracts, what's signed and what's not. You know, there's numbers of permutations. Maybe Strowman does these shows, fulfills that commitment, and works WWE around it. WWE, you don't necessarily need to be full-time or start full-time. Maybe it gives an out to the promoters to make some money. Maybe WWE would pay them to have Strowman not appear, and maybe they just say, okay, well, we tried it. Or maybe the shows go on as scheduled without Strowman, and let's see what happens.
I wonder if Braun is, you know, obviously really gone. It seems like pretty credible sources look like that he is. The Triple H wanted him back, and Triple H had glowing things to say about him in an Ariel Helwani interview. So it's one of those things where I think he's headed back, almost guaranteed he's back. I mean, it's not, nothing's a guarantee in wrestling. We know that a million times over. But it seems like if he's gone, CYN, I can't see them lasting like at all without him.
Yeah. And you know, there was a number of stars potentially attached for a while, but everyone is kind of going off and doing their own things, or some of the main stars, right? Scarlett Bordeaux and John, I'm going to call on you once again for her husband.
Karrion Kross.
Yes, thank you. A recent guest of the of your podcast, of course. It seemed like he was going to be a part. I'm not sure if he was ever advertised for these shows, but there was some sort of attachment there, seemingly. But Strowman was really the key piece. But now there's, you know, EC3 and towns like that, where, fair enough, no shade on him or anyone else like that. But Strowman was that rare name that, if promoted correctly, if marketed correctly, that you could really draw a great house, like I think, where was it, in Wisconsin, Blizzard, like a Blizzard show drew a big house. Of course, Northeast Wrestling always did good business. He wasn't on that many shows. It didn't seem like he was shading the indies when he was in WWE, and then when he hit the circuit, it wasn't like he was all in on that, because, you know, he's made a lot of money, I would assume, and save that money. So it wasn't something where he had to like do multiple shows a week, or, you know, take whatever came. So, you know, some people, they're just a better fit for certain types of promotions. Sort of like last week we were talking about that Jeff Jarrett maybe he's always best in that opposition position to WWE. And someone like Braun Strowman, maybe he's best in the WWE universe in a tippy top or almost top position.
To me, though, man, if he's gone, like if CYN continues on, first of all, maybe try to get some money from WWE for, you know, taking away a contract, the guy, even though I think he's technically the owner, so I don't know how that would really work, but, you know, maybe get something out of it. But, man, that would kind of kill it, and maybe that's why we're seeing this NWA invasion going on with CYN, because maybe, you know, they're trying to latch onto another promotion, just try to keep themselves going, and maybe even turn it into a faction if the promotion doesn't continue on.
Yeah, that's interesting. Sometimes you need those partnerships, and NWA, you know, was teaming up with AEW before. There was some friction for a while, but NWA and CYN, I could see that, but not always in the best way, I guess. Meaning that, like, sometimes the NWA feels a little bit dark. Some of their talents, and like depending on where you stand on the political spectrum, some of the people that they're promoting, and CYN is pretty heavy in that spectrum. So it's sort of like, in a way, like meeting like, but I don't know if it positions anyone in a better spotlight for the fans.
What's going on with MLW?
Yeah, so John Orend reported that Cox dropped beIN Sports from its channel lineup last night. That, of course, the channel was dropped by Comcast in 2018, but Charter, Dish, YouTube still carry it. So I think the last time that I had seen the numbers, it was about 13 million homes for beIN Sports. Now, with Cox, a major distributor on cable, dropping it, it's like not really a viable cable company now. It was about, at the numbers I'm just looking at quick, that they serve 6.5 million customers. So this isn't correct math. I'm just doing some dirty math, right? Like, so if we had like 13 million and then if Cox was at 6.5 million and they didn't add any other traditional cable outlets, are they down to 6.5 million homes now? For MLW, you know, as long as the network continues and the money comes, I think they're based in the Middle East, beIN Sports. They're a big network, big money network in the Middle East. So this is just ancillary, but in terms of distribution, you know, it's a less universe for MLW, but the real question is that if this station continues, because MLW gets the rights fees from beIN Sports, I would think the contract would be no matter what their distribution is, right? It's like a specific number. But also, beIN Sports has expanded smartly into the Diginets, which we've talked about many times on the show, where they have beIN Sports Extra now, which MLW signed a deal to be on that platform. So less in the cable, they've become more in the over-air Diginets, which some people utilize, some people don't. So it's not great news for MLW, but I don't know if it'll affect their bottom line at all.
So MLW is kind of like, not floating, but it seems like they've been teasing announcements, teasing big stuff, but kind of nothing came. But they are coming back to ECW Arena, which is a big venue for them, and it's great. So it's like they really need more TV exposure, it seems like, right? I mean, if they can get it, maybe they can.
Yeah, it's always like, even, I don't know if it was from day one, but pretty much since they've been on beIN Sports, they're always talking about like other networks. Like, I've made this comparison before, like they're dating beIN Sports, but they're allowed to see other people too. So they've always been like shopping around. So they're on a number of streaming platforms, even though they're not on DAZN anymore. They're on YouTube, of course, which everyone is, but Pluto TV, which is a nice get for them. The main Pluto TV channel, which I think also airs New Japan. And of course, they're on Fight as well. And then they have their international, which is, they kind of, it's funny on their website, they list it like market by market, like Wata Fight channel. So, like, you know, if you were to look at it quickly, you'd be like, oh wow, this is a lot of countries. But sometimes it's not necessarily a country. It might be a region or a territory that's small. So, but they have the Wata Fight Network, Fight Channel. There are on Star Times, which is also in the Middle East. So that's there actually, and Fight Club Poland. So I'm not familiar with that niche network. If you're listening from there, you know, let us know. And then another in Africa, they're on MBC in Mauritius. I hope I'm not mispronouncing that. So it's interesting that they're making some good inroads in markets that you don't really hear about that much, in terms of like live events and like WWE and AEW. Like for some people that watch for wrestling, like MLW might be it for them, which is kind of a cool thing. Like, you know, sometimes people talk about like, oh, I'm in Europe and on Eurosport, we didn't get WWE at the time, but we got New Japan. So that was like pro wrestling for me. So sometimes it's cool to like think about that worldwide. Oh, and of course they're on in the UK, which we've talked about before, Iozot TV on Sky 192. So they've done some deals internationally. So hopefully that's some good revenue. But as far as I see, just looking at it from the outside, like the beIN Sports rights fee is really like what I'd imagine keeps things going.
What about WOW and Lakers owner Jeannie Buss? What's the latest on them? What's going on?
Yeah, so some more news beginning to emerge. As of this recording, we're just about 2 weeks out from the 100% syndicated program going across through from Viacom, from CBS networks, to working with Sinclair and many of the station owners across the country. There's still not a public list in terms of when, where it will air, but Ms. Buss was interviewed in Variety on a number of things, and one of the things that came up was WOW. She has high hopes for a return of WOW, which has struggled to get traction in the marketplace. Thanks to a new deal with Paramount, they'll put the league in syndicated time slots across the country. Just my aside, we forget about WOW has been around for like 20 years, off and on, right? Syndication, digital distribution. It seemed like they really found their home with Access for a while. It was getting good reviews. I don't know about the ratings, but sort of it seemed odd when it was paired with New Japan, but it seemed to work till Anthem took over. But now we finally have the right partner that'll give us the exposure that we so desperately needed to show that women can draw ratings, that women can be the center stage. So it made me think about it. Like, I wonder if this is sort of like the last chance for WOW. Jeannie Buss has invested a lot of, you know, I'd assume a lot of resources, a lot of money in keeping this going for so long, besides employing David McLean, or partnering with him on this. Like, if this doesn't work, what would they do next? You could be a digital only product, but you have to do it in a way that makes sense. I mean, this might just be sort of for fun, so maybe it doesn't need to make a profit, but just the way that she said it made me think, like, okay, like, how many chances will this get? And then via Fightful, they wrote up an interview that she did with Variety Strictly Business, and they asked why she continued the project after so many reboots. If women listen to that, then there'll be no women's sports at all. It's just taking people like me who believe and are willing to invest as promoters and figuring out a sustainable business model. We finally found the right partner in CBS Viacom, and we are now launching in September, and we have coverage over 100% of the outlets in the U.S. We're overseas and in Australia. We're picking up markets as we go along. It's one of those things where if you build it, they will come. We'll need to put our flag in the ground, and now we finally have the right partner that will give us the exposure that we so desperately needed to show that women can draw ratings, that women can be a center stage and be the draw. My side, I think that's already been proven at WrestleMania, right? This was a sustainable model that I can feel can last for generations, and this is my investment back into the women athletes. When asked if she's learned from past versions, she replied, "The product has always been strong, the storytelling, the wrestling. It was just finding the audience and making sure the women were properly trained and finding those stars. I fully expect they will find the female version of The Rock or Cena, that this will be a launching pad for stars that really needed an opportunity to gain attention and gain an audience." Buzz said it's about fresh faces and new opportunities for women. When the host wondered how a female becoming the next Rock or Cena would ultimately help WOW, she said that she believes women's wrestling is a small part, an opportunity for women to say, "I can do that. I can be strong."
Interesting. So much confidence from her about WOW. Not surprised by that, but it's almost like, where is this coming from? Like, almost like super confidence.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of like when you invest so much time and potentially resources, like I said, in this, you kind of, you want to have a way of making it work. You know, she comes from the Lakers dynasty, obviously a very successful sports franchise, if not business, of course. But kudos for David McClain, like, keeping it going. You know, like, you have to report back to Jeannie Buss, like, okay, we tried this, it didn't work. This is how much it cost us. We tried this, it didn't work. This is how much it cost us. And like, kudos to her for being patient and wanting to see it through. And this sort of like, in pro wrestling, we discount syndication because it hasn't been a part of big pro wrestling since the mid 90s. And even like the main part of pro wrestling since the early 90s. But success, if the right distribution, it could be very successful, right? Like Judge Judy, all those judge shows, Wheel of Fortune, Jeopardy, you know, some of those talk shows. Like there is big money in syndication. I don't know if it's in pro wrestling syndication anymore, but this is the biggest go of it where a company wasn't paying to syndicate, like paid programming, where you actually have a big company that is syndicating you. So I don't know if the sky's the limit, but there is an opportunity here. And hopefully we get some public ratings rather than judging it based on like how long it stays on the air. Really curious to see how this does and where it airs and when.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. It's like so much confidence in bravado. Yes, but where is it airing? You know, when? You know, it's like, who's really still on the roster? Tessa Blanchard's gone. Like, who's still there? It's crazy.
Yeah, and you probably want to start hearing about some bumpers on the local stations. Let's say WCBS2 here in New York. If that's where it's airing, you'd want to, like, have seen something or heard something. I don't watch much of CBS, but, like, I haven't heard anything about those bumpers going out anywhere yet. Still a couple weeks to go as of this recording, but that's something that you'd want to see, and you'd want to see like a station listing. Usually that's not like the last minute where that's shared. So that'll be something curious to see if it just like drops quietly and it just happens to come up when I'm doing a TV guide search, or there's going to be some promotion behind it.
So as far as GCW, what's going on with GCW?
Yeah, so Brett had tweeted recently that this weekend in which we're recording will kick off a stretch of 9 straight weekends in which I'll produce or co-produce 20 wrestling shows in 5 different states and 4 different countries. So really, you know, the deathmatch promotion that keeps going, the little engine that could, and really somewhat unprecedented, really, in the way that they're doing it in a unique way, given the way streaming and video on demand and iPay-per-views work these days. Last year, there was a lot of buzz coming out of the Chicago All Out weekend shows, or at least the Art of War show. So by the time you hear this, that will have been taken place. So interesting to see how that goes. So I'm not sure if it's like, as we've talked about, I don't think it's like been a rocket ship thus far, like from the Hammerstein show, like of just bigger venues and growth. There's been some markets that have done better than others. They've expanded, they've returned, but they're definitely growing. And the fact that they could continue to run shows in Japan, in the UK, really across the US. They're really the only promotion of its size that is kind of self-sustaining, that they can go on the road or run an internet pay-per-view and know they'll make money. I don't know if we could say that of Impact, of MLW, of the NWA, you know, of any of those promotions that we focus on and talk about week to week, because they build their own buzz and they do their own thing. Interestingly, though, their biggest matchup, I think, of anytime soon, at least in terms of mainstream interest, Moxley versus Gage, career versus title, October 8th in Atlantic City. Luis Perez predicted it right. I thought that maybe they'll do the Hammerstein because that's the hold it off till January, because that's the biggest match that they could probably do anytime soon. But Atlantic City is a hot market for them. They should sell that out, get the 1,000 people there easily. That should help the second show. And most important to them is the pay-per-view sales. So, you know, that'll be something, you know, we won't know the numbers, but that'll be something interesting to watch. Might that be something you end up at, John?
It's quite possible. Maybe. Definitely going to think about it for sure. Not a bad idea, actually, if I could make it.
Yeah, that should be pretty cool matchup.
And it's got a lot of buzz, and it's been built up for a year. I mean, it's been, I think, about a year anyway, but it's been one of those things where I'm very interested in that one.
Yeah, it's one of those like things where, you know, like boxing, maybe that happens in MMA these days too. Like, you have something build up, like it falls through for whatever reason, and like, but it stays hot. So like when it comes back, it ends up being like a bigger thing than otherwise. But, you know, I wonder, like, even in Atlantic City, I guess, I mean, Boardwalk Hall is way too big, but, you know, maybe Asbury Park Convention Center, you know, I don't know, like, you know, maybe it would be fun, like, to try a bigger venue in the same market. That's not like a huge risk, that's not super expensive, but to see if you could pack it out. But otherwise, you know what you're getting, and they'll do well regardless.
Yeah, no doubt. But I would definitely try for that bigger venue, like you said. Why not? You know, the convention center would be awesome. Why not try it out?
Yeah, and they like the ECW feel. So I've never went to a show at the convention center, but I did have a friend that went to an ECW show, and he said it was pretty crazy.
I believe it. So what is going on with ROH and Sinclair? There's more news on that, huh?
Yeah, so John Orand again, big week for him on our podcast of Sports Business Journal, reported that Sinclair's Diamond Sports Board retained Liontree and Moelis, leading to speculation that the group's 21 RSNs are being prepared to be sold. So it's, you know, it was kind of a disaster for Sinclair. They were carrying the most debt for a company that didn't go into bankruptcy. For a while, they spun off, you know, even from their quarterly reporting, but it's still draggy on them. So what a disaster from beginning to end. Some might feel that ROH would still be under the Sinclair umbrella if this purchase didn't happen, which is possible, but we have to think about it. What was happening before this sale? They were very aggressive in trying to buy local stations, which is more of their business. But they thought they would get approval under the Trump administration, but it dragged on forever, and they ultimately didn't get approval. So they had an appetite to buy media, which they've always had. And here they had an appetite bigger than their belly could hold. So I don't know if like a company seeking such aggressive growth would shoulder pro wrestling still.
To me, it seems like they are like really risky on some of these, I guess you would say RSNs, or, you know, the regional sports networks. Like, it just seems like, wow, like, why would you buy that? Or why would you try that? Or why do you think you could turn that around? Or, oh, that's not, you know, that's a sinking ship. But I don't know, it feels like they keep on losing. You know what I mean? You keep going up to the plate and striking out here.
Yeah. You know, it's the company, has always been very aggressive. they grew from, I don't know if it was an independent station, but one station at least in Baltimore, still their home base, and they just started growing and growing. And they were so much smaller, actually, when they bought Ring of Honor. I think they were in 19% of the country, and then they grew to like 40-something percent or maybe even more. So like the growth was really aggressive. So sometimes when you keep gambling, you keep doing that, and then eventually like you hit a ceiling and you lose. And speaking about Sinclair, and John, you put it on my radar last week. I wasn't aware of any of the chatter. Was another look at the ROH sale price. So I started going through, first I found, well, a couple of things. One, I wasn't aware that, speaking of Brian Last and Jim Cornette had spoken about it on their show for about 15 minutes, that the quarterly report came out and it was showing that during the time period Ring of Honor was sold, from my understanding, that they sold a number of assets and it looked like it totaled under 10 million. So just doing the math, it made them think, and then you know, subsequently us and so on, to think like, well, what was the sale price, right? Because looking at the balance sheets, and it doesn't appear to show that it was the, what was it, 30 to 50 million, 40 to 50 million that was speculated about in the newsletters and we were running with and talking about for quite a while. I don't know, like, was the price like split up? Remember, people still talking about the $2 million for WCW to WWE, but that included a commitment for WWE to advertise on the Turner networks, a certain dollar amount or for a certain amount of years. So sometimes these deals are more complicated than they seem, but from what's coming out now in this, in these reports, which should be the most accurate element, is that the price was much lower than people thought.
Yeah, so what is the like official total? Is it, is that correct? It was only 10 or?
So it seems like it's far under 10 because included in these numbers was actual television stations. Like I don't have it in front of me, but if it was the station in, just making this up, Kansas City, that was a local NBC affiliate, I don't imagine that would be cheap, right? And there was a few of those like thrown in there. So let's say each one of those was half a million, you know, a quarter, a third of a million or whatever. So then you're slicing millions off that 9 or 10 million figure. So maybe the sale price was 4 to 5 million. We don't know, which in some ways makes sense. But other ways, I look at sports rights. And I know like pro wrestling, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Like, it just seems like things are going for crazy amounts now. Like even leagues that have never been that popular, like National Lacrosse League, you know, all this sort of stuff, like off-brand leagues seem to be very hot right now. And I'd just be surprised if a pro wrestling company with that much back catalog would sell for that cheap, especially knowing that WWE kicked the tires, Anthem kicked the tires. So like if that was the final price, maybe it was just like, you know, somebody bid two, somebody bid three, somebody bid 4 million or whatever, that it would go that low. So maybe it'll come out some more information, but that's just my thoughts on it at the moment.
So they lost money on it, huh? Because didn't they buy it for 11 million or 10 million?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Like that was the number. I was surprised when that number had come out. And then I saw it in two or three places, right? So the 10 million number is pretty well established. I guess the question is what happened between then and the sale, right? Like, did they lose money on those years? I mean, from a company perspective, it still might have been worthwhile because they would give them very little ad time and all of the local stations would benefit. So even like, it was sort of like that, like a microcosm of that WCW thing. Whereas like if Turner gave WCW rights fees, it would have always been profitable. But the way it was accounted for, WCW didn't get rights fees and they had to, you know, make it up on house shows and pay-per-views and whatever. And for many of those years, they lost money. So similarly, Ring of Honor, they were only given a percentage of advertising sales. But who else got those advertising sales? Other Sinclair companies. So like for the big brand, big umbrella overall, I think it was profit making. For the bottom line of ROH, I think there's some years that might have been a negative, but I don't think it was a mistake for the company. But when you're investing and it's fairly known that you invested for $10 million, and if you sold for $5 million, yeah, that's kind of embarrassing. Your goal generally is to sell it for multiples of that number, but Sinclair isn't in a great position right now.
So where did that $35 million number, $40 million number come from?
Probably the newsletters. I think it came out like pretty fast and hard. Like, I don't want to say like Dave Meltzer was the first one to report that or whatever, but like it seemed to be the number that everyone was going with like immediately. So I'm not sure, you know, where that came out, whether it was 3.5 and somehow it got multiplied by 10. I don't know. So be curious to see, maybe somebody will ask on a call once, like to say, to clarify, these numbers, you know, can you break it out? And maybe they will, but probably not if they didn't yet.
Man, it just seems like, wow, what was like $35 million? He overpaid. This is crazy. To all of a sudden, like, oh, it could be $10 million. Like, oh, okay, not bad. And then it could be $4 or $5 million. Like, wow, he stole it. You know what I mean? It's such a different thing. I wonder if he'll come out and kind of, Tony Khan, meaning he'll come out and kind of clear the air. Because if he did buy it for that cheap, I mean, damn, like, what a steal, because he could use that library pretty easily and make money off of it if he wanted to.
Yeah, so this is my shout out to Brandon Thurston, who is probably listening to this on his AM jog one day. But since you're on the conference calls with Tony now, if you could ask him, we'd appreciate it.
So as far as Cornetto, he was very skeptical from the beginning of the high price, right?
Yeah. Right. There was one, I usually listen to him in like the YouTube clips. So there was one where, yeah, he was skeptical in the beginning. You're right. And then somebody shared with him the piece from the quarterly report. And then he went deeper into it, that he was, you know, it seemed to confirm it, but he was, you know, very dim on Tony Khan having paid tens of millions of dollars for the promotion. I just thought, like, for me, I did believe it just because I'm just following in my feed all the sports rights. Somebody that I'm connected to professionally, that's like one of the things he does, like as a professional reporter, editor, he follows like sports rights. So like, I'm just seeing like such high numbers for like leagues that are nowhere near as popular as Ring of Honor, I feel like, in mainstream sports. So I was like, okay, then that's a real number. But on the other hand, when you look at pro wrestling history, right, like that would be a huge amount to pay. Like the only time that I've heard about like a number in, let's say we more broadly include MMA, like it's been a while, but I feel like the UFC paid like tens of millions of dollars for Pride.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever really got, you know, their money back from it, rather than at least just creating sort of like a, I wouldn't say a monopoly, but sort of getting a greater hold on the market by taking Pride off the board.
And I remember they paid a pretty decent chunk at one point for Strikeforce as well, but I mean that's completely different, obviously, than what we're talking about here. Obviously MMA versus pro wrestling, but it's not too far out of the realm and too different of a scenario. It's just interesting, like if he paid that much for ROH, no wonder he's not kind of like you know what I mean, not going crazy like TV deals, more pay-per-views or whatever. It's like, hey, I only paid this much for it, like that's nothing for him, you know, the chump change to him. So if it's only $5 million or so, I could kind of see why they're slow rolling it here.
Yeah, and I think the general expectations would be that the market would welcome them, but like Ring of Honor throughout their whole life has been like close to TV deals. And whenever they've gotten it, I mean, the HDNet one lasted a while, but it was nothing like Access's today. And then they had like sort of like that Destination America deal where it was like sort of a little bit of poking at TNA for some reason. Like there was some like friction between like the network and TNA. So like suddenly Ring of Honor was on, but that was gone. And then like for the rest of the time, no matter who the owner's been, it's always been like speculating on like getting a TV deal.
What is going on with Triller?
Yeah, so an interesting thing that came out in the wrap is that they raised $200 million ahead of their IPO relaunch. I think they were going to do the SPAC deal, which would be like that it doesn't go public. Like it would sort of be a reverse merger where they would buy another company and then people would invest, and then Triller would have to invest in something and then give people a return for that money, whereas they're going more of a traditional route now. When it was a SPAC deal, they were valuing it at $5 billion. So now they're valuing it at $3 billion. But I think there's a burn rate on the money, meaning that you're spending more than you're making. But what was interesting that came out in the article was that all of the divisions of Triller are profitable except for Versus. So they're mostly their rap battle division. So that means that Fight is profitable.
Interesting. I was always kind of curious because it seemed like Fight was profitable, but it just, you're always curious. You never know the ins and outs of what's going on behind the scenes, but you know, that sounds about right.
Yeah. And they're like, they never took huge risks with Fight in that it was always like a partnership. So like if they're promoting with someone, like we've talked about, like are they ever going to have their own promotion? But like it was teaming up all the way back. I was watching our interview with Jeff Jarrett on YouTube recently, and he was reflecting back when Fight was Flips still. So you know, when he brought New Japan to them, but all the way through now with GCW, that Fight is the platform, and they have a marketing end, and they've done a good job with it, but they've never taken like a huge risk on anything, whereas it's always more like partnerships, or maybe they're paying for the production, but they're not paying for the whole thing.
With Fight TV, I know we've been kind of talked about it before, but do you think that if there's some other companies out there like Control Your Narrative or somebody, I know they're part of the other pro wrestling network, but if something, a company of that size, do you think like they would jump back in? Because if they're profitable, you think they would jump back in and own maybe GCW, try to own a piece of the wrestling programs?
Yeah. I mean, just the way that Triller has bought other companies, bare knuckle fighting, which seems like it has a higher profile now. Pillow fighting championships. I'm not sure how that sport is doing right now. It was a curiosity discussion, I'm sure. They've acquired these type of promotions before. And with Fight, like pro wrestling is really front and center of what they do. So, you know, it's always been curious that they haven't owned a pro wrestling company. Like Control Your Narrative is, of course, tied in with pro wrestling TV. GCW always seemed to make the most sense for the most part. But Brett, of course, is working towards, their own network or their own streaming platform, however it's defined, which was first reported on our podcast, I believe. But yes, GCW probably has like the most buzz of anything, but there's only so much that Fight can do with it because it's not a mainstream product. It's like a niche product. And the other idea that we talked about last week was, of course, Conrad and Jeff Jarrett speculation of buying Impact, like that would make a lot of sense to have that on Fight. But in the next news item, it looks like Conrad and JJ are focused on something else at the moment.
Yeah, exactly what I was leading into. The Observer was saying something about AAA Conrad and JJ, meaning Jeff Jarrett. What's going on with them?
Yeah, so I'll just read this portion. Something's likely happening with Jarrett and maybe Thompson. On their podcast, they talked about how both were going to Mexico in a few weeks. They didn't say what for. Jarrett, Thompson, Roldan, and Bischoff went to dinner. We saw those pictures on Twitter. Thompson said he and Jarrett would not be starting up a promotion. According to Meltzer, Jarrett is always looking to start a promotion. But Jarrett did an angle with Latin Lover earlier this year, but then it wasn't followed up on, as Jarrett was back in WWE. Now with Jarrett out of WWE and his long history in AAA, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he winds up doing big shows here. Fine. We're told that no deal for Jarrett has been done as of yet, but they are wanting to work with Thompson in opening up the U.S. market. AAA obviously wants to run the U.S. after getting Spanish language television, and there have been talks for years, but no deal has been reached. We're told that the TV deals that they have been offered are too one-sided in the sense all the benefits would be to the station and very little to the promotion. So I'd imagine we know that they're on Estrella TV now for a number of specials, but I'd imagine like a bigger Spanish language network is sort of like, yeah, we'll find a place for you, but you know, you get a little bit of the TV ad time, or you know, it's just for exposure or something like that. So maybe they don't have the leverage in the same cachet. Now, I remember listening to Conrad talking about Flair's last match, and he was like very effusive about the Lucha Libre AAA match, and like that his mom and dad had bought the pay-per-view and they were talking about it the next day. It seemed like, you know, I'm sure it was genuine, but it just seemed like a little bit over the top. So now that this is coming out, it like makes me like curious. But for AAA, sure, having Conrad Thompson like promote you is great. Like, you know, he has a big audience and so on. For Thompson, I'm not sure, like, unless they're paying him a fee. But if it's more like on performance, like if he has points in like US pay-per-view sales or ticket sales or something like that, I think the upside for him is lower working for a company like AAA rather than if he had the opportunity to work for a company like Impact.
With him, like, you think that he's okay, he's just 50 plus years old, like, can he still do it? And then he goes out and he looks amazing, and then he's still the best heel in the business. Like, just like absolutely hateable guy. I mean, I feel like, man, where's everybody been for? I know he obviously had some problems with alcohol and stuff, but like, where's everybody been for the last few years? Like, somebody could have been using him somewhere, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like, we're almost getting him too late. We could have been using him for all these years.
Yeah, and I was cheering Jeff on in the Hammerstein for that show against Effie.
Yeah, see, GCW, you know, they knew to use him, but it's like, I don't know, like, and obviously Flair knew, but I feel like, man, he should be out there doing more stuff in AAA. I feel like he was great for them. I mean, man, talk about heel heat when he came out. Man, they're throwing trash at him and everything else, so that's a perfect opportunity to start up again.
Yeah, AAA really knows how to use the older talent. I think that's partly like lucha culture that, you know, most people wear a mask, so you're sort of ageless in a way, you know, even if you can't do the same moves. But I think for Jeff, like, it depends on the opportunity. Like, it might be a better opportunity for him to be an executive and like forget about the ring at certain points, but then come back at other points. Sometimes it's better not to be out there like too much. And I feel like the podcast has helped him a lot because people perceived him in one way, and here people are getting to know him a lot better, and like his cachet has like grown. So it's like a big deal when he's doing something, whereas like before it was sort of like, okay, Jeff's running global now, and you know, whatever it is. And I'm actually, it's funny because I was in Nashville, and I didn't get a chance to go, but I learned a little bit more about the Tennessee State Fair, and then I happened to see like that Global, you know, was hired to run some shows there. So sometimes something that seems like a little bit rinky dink is actually bigger than it seems when you look into it. So he's been up to so many interesting things the last few years.
with Conrad. You think he's really interested in getting to wrestling? It seems like little by little, yes, but is it true? I mean, could he actually be really interested in not only taking over the podcast, but actually running shows?
I think like not, maybe like on his weekend, like on the big weekends that he's established, like to be the promoter of record. But I think there is the opportunity. He sees he has this platform that he can draw from to build upon. And, you know, like he says, he's a businessman. He likes making money. It's besides just enjoying it. So there seems to be a lot of opportunities for him here.
Man, Connie's taking over. I don't know. It seems like little by little, he's definitely taken over the wrestling world.
Yeah, it was just, I remember like hearing like he was going to do a podcast with Ric Flair. Like I had no idea of like the relationships, and I was like, who, like what? And then that didn't last very long. And then what was it? Like he came out with Bruce Pritchard next, and then that yep. like really hit, and then that grew.
Yep, definitely. So what is going on with Billy Corgan and the NWA?
Yeah, so interestingly, Corgan announced that the NWA would be in St. Louis at the Chase every year for the anniversary show. So I was thinking, right, this year was 74. So yep. I was thinking for 75, where would they be? That could be interesting. And they, it didn't seem like they drew all that well or had that much buzz. I know Corgan was on like a local station talking about it before, and there's an article and so on, but it didn't seem to do that well here in the return. So I was surprised to see that, and not too much buzz from the weekend compared to previous years. So if anyone, like talking about promotions, and I have no idea like if they, how well they know each other, and neither one really needs the other, but look how well Thompson did with just the Jim Crockett promotions brand. What if he had the NWA brand? Like there would be a lot to work with. So Corgan can do whatever he wants. He's been successful enough. But like if anyone was going to look to team up with Thompson, and if they could figure out a way to make things work, even with like just like branding and merchandising, like giving Thompson access to promote the NWA would be great.
And he's got access to the greatest NWA champion of all time, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, so who obviously helped sell out the Chase last year. And obviously that's why, to be honest to me, that's why they didn't sell it this year. They didn't have the Nature.
Yeah, that's true. A good point. A great asset to utilize if you would want to promote the NWA brand.
One final bit of news here. What is going on at the Mall of America? Everybody remembers the Mall of America for WCW's Nitro debut, and you know, just an amazing show that was. So what's the latest on the Mall of America?
Yeah, so as we talked about a few months ago, it's getting close. September 10th, the second Pro Wrestling show at the Mall will be promoted by First Wrestling. The show sold out well in advance, according to The Observer. And it'll be Rob Van Dam versus Dante Martin in the main event.
Oh, wow. Might get a decent card for that, or a decent crowd for that. Wow, nice. All right, how many, like, are they expecting? How many years, like, the sellout, if you will? How much people?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's hard to tell. I looked at it when the tickets were on sale, because it's sort of like on the floor, and then you're like, are you the first balcony, the second balcony, the third, just because it's so such a unique setup. I wouldn't imagine more than 1,000, but I don't know how like those things work in such a unique area. We see a lot of the mall shows more, I think, like internationally. I believe our friends MKW have done some mall shows, but also friends at WrestleMap that share the articles and pictures internationally. You'll see that more common with mall shows, but we've even seen in the US, which we've talked about, like as some malls have closed their flagship retail venues, sometimes there is like pro wrestling being utilized there too, which is interesting. But I'm happy to say that in Nashville, Tennessee, the mall is alive and well. We went to the mall there that has the Wax Museum and all that stuff. Like there was not one vacancy in that mall. Every retail shop was still filled up.
Wow. Nice. That's different.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. Like when I've seen
Malls by Me,
half the
place. Malls by Me, no, terrible.
Yeah.
And you said when you were in New York, it was bad too?
Yeah, whenever I've been like in Long Island or I know in Rockland County, there, I don't know how well the gigantic one is, the Rockland Mall, but the one that sort of became obsolete years ago, but I think that one like was on the outs, is on the outs because of that. And you would hear more about like Amazon taking over these malls for distribution centers, which I just read about that Amazon is actually going to scale back. They're not going to be as aggressive in distribution anymore.
So as far as this week, I guess that kind of wraps up the show, but let's get into some plugs. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. And of course, Patreon, patreon.com/tmptempire. What do you got?
Yeah, thank you again to Middle Kingdom Wrestling and Title Match Network for sponsoring and advertising on our program. You help us keep doing what we're doing. If you'd like to become an advertiser yourself, sponsor, or pay for a shout-out even, you can DM me at LaVieMarg, LaVieMarg. So that's, of course, my Twitter handle. Or send an email, LaVieMarg@gmail.com.
Of course, thank you to all the sponsors. SC Scoops, the official business podcast of SC Scoops. I'd like to thank them. And of course, with Title Match Network, I just want to mention this. You can save 20%. Save 20 now for 20% off, and you could binge watch some of the best wrestling action in the world. They got so much cool stuff on there, so many different things. So I really wanted to put them over because, man, you see so much content out there as far as wrestling stuff. And you can't forget about Title Match Network because they got so many cool stuff. Kenny Omega, Kevin Steen, AJ Styles, The Young Bucks, Jesse the Body Ventura, Necro Butcher. I mean, they've got it all. They've got some awesome content. So I really wanted to get out there and put those guys over because they got some great stuff. So thank you to them. Obviously, thank you to Middle Kingdom Wrestling. And thank you to Lavi. We'll see everybody right back here next week for a little business of the business. Have a good one, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Title Match Wrestling and Title Match Network. Go to TitleMatchNetwork.com to save 20% off all memberships with the coupon code SAVE20NOW. That's SAVE20NOW, save 20 now. Members get access to every pay-per-view of the year, plus all VOD titles on site. It is one of the biggest collections of women's wrestling content on the planet. Featuring hundreds of exclusive live streams every year, a near endless amount of pay-per-views, shoot interviews, documentaries, and more. Multiple 24/7 channels with zero commercials, massive amount of original programming here, plus upcoming IPPVs for this month only available on Title Match, Thunder Rosa's Mission Pro Wrestling, Circle 6 Live in Las Vegas, Battle Pro in Brooklyn, all new this month, plus the latest installment of the hit series with Greg the Hammer Valentine. The Title Match Network is the perfect gift for the wrestling fan. Test out their content for free on YouTube. Just go to Title Match Network and you'll see that they have over 2 million subscribers. And of course, they're one of the largest independent wrestling channels in the world. Get exclusive access. Sign up today at TitleMatchNetwork.com. That is TitleMatchNetwork.com and use that coupon code SAVE20 now. Welcome in our new sponsor, Middle Kingdom Wrestling. Were you excited to see some Chinese pro wrestling when AEW announced that they would be featuring Chinese wrestlers on their program? You can now watch Chinese pro wrestling right now by checking out Middle Kingdom Wrestling, aka MKW. MKW is the top pro wrestling organization in China today. They are a unique pro wrestling company with Chinese characteristics. MKW has showcased, developed, and promoted wrestling in other countries such as Nepal, Vietnam, Thailand, South Korea, and more, with particular focus on countries that are part of China's One Belt, One Road initiative. MKW's live broadcasts in Japan consistently attract millions of fans, even often reaching 10 million concurrent viewers. Besides checking out MKW on YouTube and subscribing to MKW, you can also purchase the first ever international wrestling merchandise from Middle Kingdom Wrestling on ProWrestlingTees.com. It says in Chinese, "Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle." This is a great, great art piece on the shirt. It's funny, it's positive. Best of all, it promotes wrestling and the Chinese culture. So take the call to action from MKW. Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle. Middle Kingdom Wrestling.